signal strength.
Welcome to the Turn Signal Podcast. The Voice of America was established in 1942 to counter Nazi propaganda being broadcast from Germany, and has been funded by law since then. It's grown to serve as a source of accurate news all over the world in over 49 languages, continuing to represent the best of America abroad. Now the VOA is under attack by the Trump administration as an example of supposed waste, fraud, and abuse, and the administration calls the agency the Voice of Radical America. Rob and I sat down with Steve Herman, the chief national correspondent for Voice of America and former White House bureau chief, to discuss the unprecedented shutdown of the VOA in March 2025 after 83 years of continuous broadcasting. After the show, visit the show notes for links including Steve's book on covering the White House, his ham radio hobby, and ways to support the VOA, and be sure to subscribe to the Turn Signal podcast. Here's our conversation with Steve. So thanks for joining. This is our podcast, our modest podcast, where we talk about politics and this administration, and it's brand new. So we appreciate you joining. So Steve, you're formerly the White House Bureau Chief for the Voice of America. And now you're the Chief National Correspondent for the Voice of America.
That is correct, Patrick. Unable to report, though, since the middle of March.
Right. And in fact, this morning I went and I looked to see what the Voice of America podcast, it looks like the international edition, the last episode was on March 13th. And it was, they were talking about the tariffs and Ukraine, a cyclone in Africa. I was just struck that, like, here's this great news source that's now just stopped. And I think I heard you on MSNBC saying that it had been broadcasting uninterrupted for how many years?
83 years. And when we went off the air in the middle of March, we had 49 language services, including English and learning English, reaching an audience of about 340 million at least per week on TV, radio, online, through apps, you name it. We were there. In talking to some of the most vulnerable people in the world, in terms of poverty, in terms of conflict, epidemics, who are neglected by the rest of the world.
Right. So would you say that the Voice of America and its sister broadcasting stations are they there to fill a gap?
Yes, of course. Not only are we exporting our American values of democracy in a free press, we're also informing people in countries under authoritarian governments or in countries where they just don't have the adequate media infrastructure of not only what's happening here in the United States in a fair and balanced manner, but also what may be happening in their country, in their regions as well.
Right. So in countries where there's just not the same kind of variety of media, they don't have an MSNBC where there's counter programming to what the state broadcasters are saying. Is that the idea?
Well, in countries where there is authoritarian control of media, absolutely. But you have other countries that may not be under totalitarian rule, where they just don't have robust news gathering capabilities or able to cover the entire country. You know, we broadcast into the Horn of Africa. All that's conflict that's happening, say, in Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia, Sudan is another perfect example where people were relying on VOA broadcast to find out what was happening in their own backyard. And there's some really terrible things going on there, as you know. Of course, we broadcast in Russian and Ukrainian. In most of Eastern Europe, most people do speak Russian. And most of the Russian language media they can access is under the control of Moscow, with the exception of Radio Liberty, which is Radio Free Europe, and the Voice of America. And then, of course, North Korea, which is one of the few places we still broadcast on shortwave and AM radio to reach. And another example would be Burma, Myanmar. We had the recent earthquake there. We were not able to communicate to the people in there what had happened. And there are those who have said over the years, oh, you know, from the United States, CNN can just be used to broadcast to the rest of the world. Well, most of what we do is not commercially viable. A perfect example would be we broadcast in the Rohingya language to those who have been exiled from Burma, that Muslim minority that's now in refugee camps in Bangladesh. There is no way anybody is going to set up a Rohingya language broadcast as a commercial entity. So it's either going to have to be philanthropy or government funded.
Right. Okay. So this sounds like a really involved operation that costs a lot of money. It's a lot of taxpayer money. So there must be a good reason to do it that benefits us, the American people. And so can you get into a little bit about that, especially, you know, I mean, I think with the Russia-Ukraine conflict, you know, where we're more kind of adversarial, even in Korea, it kind of makes sense. But I like where you're going, where you're explaining why this is so important, even in other countries. Is part of it that we're showing what democratic values in that action by demonstrating what American journalism looks like and kind of exporting that to the rest of the world?
That's part of it, obviously. I like to say that the Voice of America and our sister broadcasters, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia, the Middle East Broadcasting Networks, Radio and TV Marti in Spanish to Cuba, are the best bang for the buck in terms of public diplomacy from the United States. And we're also the hard edge of soft power. And I don't know how familiar you are with Joseph Nye, who is the academic who came up with the term soft power. But soft power is used by governments not only to enhance the image of their country, but also to try to ensure that they don't need to use hard power. So if we're informing people, giving them accurate information, prevents rumors, can prevent the spread of epidemics, can prevent the spread of conflict, we can minimize these sort of life-threatening issues. And that means that these conflicts don't spread or epidemics don't spread, and that we have to get involved or that we are threatened in some way. That's one sort of idealistic way to look at what we do. And, you know, when VOA went on the air in 1942, our first language was German, by the way. And we said in that first broadcast, whether the news is good or bad, we're going to tell you the truth, which was sort of a novel concept at the time, because we were countering the Nazi propaganda. You could be here in the Washington, D.C. area and turn on your radio and hear broadcasts from Nazi Germany. And then, of course, the Japanese, you know, were winning every battle in the Pacific and sinking every ship in sight that had the American flag on it, according to them. Well, it wasn't the truth, obviously. Certainly, there was some wartime censorship because VOA was under the Office of War Information. But during the Cold War and thereafter, that mission stayed the same, to tell the truth, to report accurately and reflect America in a balanced manner, which also meant reporting on things in America that weren't always complimentary. You know, when people hear that kind of broadcast compared to the propaganda they're getting domestically, and sometimes the light bulb goes off in their head and they, aha. You know, or they could look in their own backyard and see us reporting about things that were happening in their city, their country, that their own media wasn't reporting. And so they go from maybe some skepticism, because until then they thought all media is propaganda. And they learn about the values of democracy and what a free press is and what balanced reporting is. And, you know, that's one reason that I've stayed with VOA. For more than 20 years, longest I've ever held a single job, I'll tell you that.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a good job. I think that light bulb makes perfect sense. If you were never used to hearing any kind of state media actually criticize your own government, and then you heard that on The Voice of America, and I don't mean criticize, I just mean present a critical view or an opposite view. And in fact, I even listened to that March 13th, hopefully not final, podcast from the VOA. And, you know, it absolutely presented a view with regard to the tariffs that they could be harmful, at least in the short term, to Americans. And I can see how that would be revelatory. Like, what am I hearing? Like, there's a world in which the press, in fact, even the press funded by the government, is critical of that
right
government. And that is really different. I think that that's really interesting. It goes to the core of the VOA. One thing I wanted to talk about, which actually came up in the lawsuit, particularly in the pleadings in the VOA case in the District of Columbia, the pleadings right really went into, did a great job describing the firewall. Can you talk a little bit about the firewall, which allows the VOA to operate independently as journalists while simultaneously being funded by the government?
Right. And this is a law. It was passed by Congress and signed by a president, just as the charter was as well. And what the firewall is meant to ensure is that the government, including our own parent agency or no other part of the government, whether it's the White House or the State Department, you name it, can interfere in our journalism. There is a place for editorials, official editorials of the United States government on the VOA website and on the broadcasts. But as far as the journalism, that is up to the people running the Voice of America, which is under something called the U.S. Agency for Global Media. And we are in a legal battle with our parent agency right now. There's a couple of lawsuits. I'm a declarant involved with the lawsuit known as Wedakuswara v. Lake. Wedakuswara refers to Patsy Wedakuswara, who is my successor as VOA's White House bureau chief. And what we want is to get back on the air and to have the firewall and the charter respected. And the charter says, you know, we have to be fair and balanced. We must reflect American thought in institution. But
I have it up right now. Let me yeah, read it.
Sure.
Title 5, the United States Information and Educational Exchange Act 1948 is amended by adding the following new section. Section 503, the long-range interests of the United States are served by communicating directly with the peoples of the world by radio. To be effective, the Voice of America must win the attention and respect of listeners. These principles will therefore govern Voice of America VOA broadcasts. 1, VOA will serve as a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. VOA news will be accurate, objective, and comprehensive. 2, VOA will represent America, not any single segment of American society, and will therefore present a balanced and comprehensive projection of significant American thought and institutions. 3, VOA will present the policies of the United States clearly and effectively, and will also present responsible discussions and opinions on those policies.
Yeah, the only thing that's changed or outdated from that language is it's not just radio anymore.
Right. Yeah. In fact, the radios is radio now the minority of content coming out from VOA?
Yeah, I would say so. The majority of our language services, we're using television or video streaming, distributed by satellite TV or affiliates in different languages and countries. Some radio still to Africa, still some to Southeast Asia, and as I mentioned, to North Korea as well. Whatever is the best way to reach an audience, we'll use that technology. I've been a proponent, obviously, as a ham radio guy like you, of not completely shutting down all the shortwave radio. Yes, it's expensive to maintain. There's not that large of an audience anymore. But when all else fails, as we saw when with the full-scale invasion of Russia into Ukraine, you know, people are fleeing their homes. They don't have access to the internet. They can't carry satellite TV dishes on their backs. They're going to get information through battery-operated radios, and the best way to reach them is obviously going to be via, you know, whatever radio technology is available, whether it's shortwave or AM or FM. AM and FM don't go that far, as you know. Shortwave goes incredible distances. You have to have a special radio to pick up those frequencies. Not a lot of people do anymore, but in a crisis, maybe one person in a town, in a community, a street has that capability, can pick it up and relay that information to other people. So just don't look at the number of people that have, you know, shortwave radios to assess whether there's value in keeping shortwave radio. We're on all the different apps. So I remember being in Yangon, formerly known as Rangoon, the capital of Burma or Myanmar, and watching the Burmese language nightly VOA newscast out of Washington on my phone coming through on, I think it was Facebook. So whatever is the appropriate technology to use that has an audience, a potential audience, we were using it.
Yeah. So we were just talking about the charter, which is embedded in the statute, United States law. And there's a series of laws which require the administration to fund the VOA, operate the VOA, and fund other third parties which create, you know, the same kind of media like Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. And so it's fair to say that the administration is, by shutting down this agency, not just trimming it or, you know, doing efficiency improvements, but really shutting it down, is acting directly against the expressed will of Congress, meaning that this is illegal.
That's our contention in the lawsuit, that this is executive overreach. These monies were allocated by Congress. If you want to give significantly less money or more money to run the Voice of America, that's something that Congress needs to change, not unilaterally the White House or the executive branch of government. And we've had two judges that have agreed with us at the federal district court level. Then it is now at the circuit court level, and we're trying to get in front of all, I think there's 11 judges on the D.C. Circuit Court, trying to get in front of all of them, because there was a 2-1 decision recently that reversed the earlier circuit court decision, upholding the district court ruling that everybody should go back to work and the broadcast should resume. So it's on hold right now, although in recent days, USAGM has been calling back to work a very small number of VOA staff, and appears to be trying to put a sliver of the Voice of America, I don't know, back online or on the air. You know, you're not going to be able to do it with 20 people, obviously, which seems to be their intention. And also, they had canceled our wire service contracts, AP, AFP, Reuters, a couple of days before the shutdown in mid-March. And there's been an announcement that One America News, OAN, a very partisan television news outlet, which has propagated conspiracy theories and whatnot, will be providing content for the Voice of America.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Well, we believe that it would, that would also be a if VOA is forced to run that by USAGM, that would violate the firewall. And the content as it comes, as we know, the way it is over at OAN, would violate the charter.
Absolutely.
And we wouldn't want to rely on MSNBC, for example, as our content provider either. We want to be able to do our reporting and have our access to the wire services restored.
Right. So I have had my own run-ins with the federal courts in the District of Columbia, in which I brought an APA lawsuit on behalf of a client and succeeded in the district court on the basis that the government had violated its own statute. And then, unfortunately, in the Court of Appeals, for the D.C. Circuit, including with a panel, including Judge Katsas, who is on your panel, determined that my client lacked standing to bring that case. And that's just about exactly what happened here. This is,
yeah, you might want to explain what the APA is. I'm not sure everybody knows that.
Sure. The Administrative Procedure Act is it's a law, which is essentially is it's not a substantive law. It's a procedural law. So it doesn't tell the government what it needs to do, but it does provide pretty specifically how it needs to do it. And the other thing it does is it provides a very limited waiver of the sovereign immunity of the United States. So in general, the rule is that a citizen cannot sue the United States. That's the default. There are specific waivers, there are specific laws in which Congress had said, in certain cases, we will allow citizens to bring lawsuits against the United States. One of them is the Tucker Act, for example, where if the government, if you have a contract with the United States and the government breaches the contract, then you can bring an action, you know, to recover your damages from that contract. Another one is the Administrative Procedure Act, in which you can't get money damages, but you can have a judge upon a determination that the government has breached a statute or acted in a way that even just doesn't make sense, that there is no rationalization for the way that they acted, meaning they acted in an arbitrary and capricious manner or in violation of a law, that that judge can say direct the government to stop doing that, provides injunctive relief, telling the government what they need to do. And in this case, Judge Lambert said, in the case of the Voice of America, that they need to bring the agency back to life, that what they had done violated the set of statutes over, you know, half a century establishing the VOA, and that they had no right to shut it down and to bring the employees back and do turn it all back on. And so what happened at the Court of Appeals, unfortunately, the two Trump-appointed judges did not reach the issue of whether the statute had been broken, but they said because it was brought by employees that there's a separate statute that these are employees who essentially had been wrongfully terminated, and there were separate procedures for that the APA was not the appropriate avenue for relief.
Right, and our argument is that it is indeed the appropriate mechanism, because this is not a contract dispute. This is not grievances of individual employees. It's the entire agency that has been shut down. And there are those words in there that you referred to, arbitrary and capricious. And well, you know, we'll see what happens at the circuit court level. And I think whether it's the cases involving VOA or USAID, you know, what I'm hearing from the lawyers is that, you know, the Supreme Court at some point is going to have to take up this particular issue. And that will likely set the precedent for some of these other cases. But I just report about the law. You're a lawyer. So you may have a different prediction than our lawyers as to what's going to happen. Of course, we just want to go back to work and get the broadcast back on the air, although tremendous damage has been done. You know, every day that we're off the air, it's going to be very, very difficult to get the audience back. And leases were canceled for, you know, some of our broadcast distribution, and to rebuild the infrastructure and get everybody back and switch everything on, it's not going to happen overnight. And there's no indication that USAGN attends for that to happen right now, which you'll probably see coming up later on in some court filings as well.
Right. It makes absolute sense that you mention USAID and State Department, and because this is all in the context of what you were talking about before, that the soft power that is wielded by the United States and what we do abroad to pour oil on the waters, which benefits us in all kinds of ways, by encouraging peace so we don't have to spend money on war, by allowing people to remain where they are so that they don't feel such a drive to immigrate to the United States.
Right.
It's better for us. It's, you know, much less expensive for us to help people where they are. And you're right. I mean, there's kind of a concerted attack against all these different agencies which are wielding this soft power. The administration is operating from the same playbook, so it does make sense, as you suggest, that the Supreme Court eventually kind of set the roadmap for what it is that the administration can do as a legitimate exercise, as you know, rightfully, elected administration that does have some leeway into how it wants to carry out affairs of the government within the statutes, and when it is acting in a way that's outside of the scope of its power.
Yeah. I've heard it said that, well, the American people don't really benefit from any of this. Well, they do, as in some ways that you've just pointed out. But one thing is for certain, the American people are stakeholders. It's their tax dollars that pay for this. And perhaps a better job should have been done explaining to the American people what value there was in all of this. We are a purely external broadcasting service. So it's understandable that people don't know what VOA is in the United States, although a lot of people do, especially if they've come from other countries and they remember watching or listening VOA in their home country. But that's been a challenge for us because we're not allowed to advertise, so to speak, or broadcast in the United States. And now we're sort of conducting a grassroots campaign on social media to try to let the American people know of the value of the Voice of America and U.S. international broadcasting, which is why I'm making appearances on podcasts like this one and going on 60 Minutes on CBS and MSNBC several times and talking to reporters almost every day.
Steve, in addition to, the cost-saving measures and, reducing taxpayer funds, is there another stated reason that the administration has provided to muting VOA, or is it just the cost cutting? Is that the reasoning that they're giving?
Well, Robert, you've probably seen what I've seen of the stuff that's been posted on social media by certain individuals who are alleging that there was waste, fraud, corruption, security issues, which are, it's like deja vu because we heard these arguments 5 years ago when there was a previous set of political appointees who wanted to make significant changes with VOA broadcasts. And there were judicial rulings and an Office of Special Counsel report, an Office of an OIG a probe as well, which determined that these charges were essentially false. And so, for us to be accused of being security threats or engaged in fraud or, whatever is absolutely ridiculous. But the thing is, there are mechanisms to investigate all this. That is why there is the inspectors general and the Office of Special Counsel, and Congress can also scrutinize what's happening inside federal agencies. So just to say these things without presenting any evidence and say, oh, therefore, it's unsalvageable and we should shut everything down, doesn't pass the smell test, obviously.
So, Steve, you clearly stated the value of VOA and that, frankly, it's not broadcasting within the United States. So there's a lot of U.S. citizens that aren't aware. Frankly,
right.
I wasn't very aware of the VOA until recently. So what do you think it is? What is the reason that the administration, knowing that the VOA is providing great value to the safety, frankly, U.S. citizens, what is the reason that you think that the current administration is muting VOA?
Well, I don't like to be speculative in my reporting. And I don't like to be speculative in my public comments. And I would say you have to ask them to give you reasons and then to see if those reasons make any sense, because nothing's made any sense to us that we've heard.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. And I think we can say more than, Steve is in a position to about this, because we're just a couple of citizens. We're not even journalists, and we're not federal employees. But I mean, to me, it sounds like the statements that Carrie Lake and others, that it just reflects a belief that any criticism of this administration is somehow treason. That they just don't, they can't tolerate it. And I think, frankly, you know, and I'm speaking for myself, not speaking for, you know, Steve or Voice of America, but I think that there is something about the nuanced nature of actual journalism in which actually considers both sides of issues and does lend a voice to critical viewpoints of the administration is just somehow, it's just anathema to that conservative brain. We're progressives, you know. I think that there just is a difference, especially this administration just cannot tolerate anything that sounds like criticism or even self-reflection, you know, about whether our policies are abroad are the right ones.
Regardless of, you know, where you may be on the political spectrum, the Voice of America by law cannot be the voice of left America or the voice of right America. When we're reporting a story, the president makes an announcement, you know, the tariffs, right? And says, I'm going to put 125% tariffs on China. We report that, but we also will go out to people, lawmakers on Capitol Hill who may favor or oppose that particular decision. We'll try to talk to importers, you know, consumers. And if the Chinese make a comment about it, we'll also put that in our story. We try to be as comprehensive and balanced as possible. The Voice of America from day one was not set up to be the mouthpiece of whichever political party is in charge. And think about it. If one administration's going to make VOA its propaganda service, and then another party gets in, it's going to be a whiplash, right? All of a sudden, there's going to be a 180-degree change in direction. That's not what it's intended to do. And it worked for 83 years. It's been powerful and effective. And to shut it down or to try to turn it into a politicized propaganda service for one party or one president, one administration defeats the purpose of having a Voice of America.
Rob, you make a great point about the VOA not broadcasting in America by statute, which presumably is part of not, you know, being seen as propaganda.
Yeah, there's some history there. And I wrote a book that came out last year called Behind the White House Curtain. And it goes into some of the history of all of this. And what you're talking about goes back to right after World War II, there was a law passed called Smith-Mundt Act. After World War II, there were some on Capitol Hill, and this was a legitimate discussion, who said, hey, government shouldn't be in the broadcasting business at all. One reason was they definitely wanted to protect domestic broadcasters from competition from the government. The government should not be using media, which was radio back then, the broadcast media, to propagandize to its citizens or try to influence their thought. And so it's like, hey, this Voice of America was very valuable during World War II. Now we have this Cold War. We have these adversaries such as the Soviet Union, and we have Radio Moscow beaming in stuff around the world and into America. Let's continue to use the Voice of America, but we'll put it in the law that this content cannot be distributed domestically. That's loosened up a little bit over the years, and VOA content has been aired on American television in extraordinary circumstances. There was a visit some years ago by President of Turkey, Erdogan. He was driving into the Turkish embassy here in Washington, D.C., and there were some protesters in the park across the street from the embassy. And Erdogan apparently sent his security guards in to beat up these protesters.
I remember.
Well, yeah, VOA was the one who had cameras there. And so that evening, all the major networks, and I think CNN and Fox and MSNBC, also used that video. So there's an extraordinary circumstance where some of our content would end up, you know, on being used domestically. But we're not competing with CNN or Fox or NBC or ABC. We're a purely external broadcasting service.
So, Steve, while we have you, give us some war stories. I mean, maybe something from your book about something maybe that happened in the White House, or say, I know that you worked extensively in Asia and abroad. Tell us something exciting that happened, which maybe captures some of this and what we've been talking about.
Well, there were a lot of exciting moments. I guess that's maybe another word to use. I was on the front lines of a lot of stories, including the war in Afghanistan, the end of the civil war in Sri Lanka. I'm going in and getting to the worst devastated areas, which were very remote, by hopping on military helicopters in the Philippines in the aftermath of Typhoon Haiyan. I was one of the first reporters to get into the hot zone of Fukushima after the tsunami. Wow. Earthquake triggered the tsunami, which triggered a nuclear power plant meltdown. Everybody else is running away from that. I'm the crazy person trying to get in. although I had a background, from earlier coverage in Nevada of nuclear testing, so I knew what the calculated risks were in dealing with radiation and such. There's a lot of stories like that, and that's what my colleagues at great risk have been doing for many, many years. Wherever the worst things are happening in the world, we will try to have a Voice of America reporter on the ground. Accuracy is our main goal, not speed. We're not looking to scoop to be the first. It does happen sometimes. It's nice. But we want to ensure that if somebody's listening to one of our broadcasts, watching a TV report, or reading it on the web, that they can be assured that when we put something out, that it's accurate and balanced.
Steve, what before the middle of March, how many approximately employees made up the VOA, and what approximate annual budget does the VOA have?
Yeah, so I'm not counting sort of freelance people who contribute to our reporting around the world, but between staff and contractors, we had just about 1,350. Now, that sounds fairly robust, but remember, that's being spread out among nearly 50 language services operating, and VOA is always on the air somewhere, 24/7, 365. It's not a lot of people. About 500 of those are contractors, which we know that the parent agency wants to eliminate. And we also believe they are poised to send RIF notices, reduction in force, perhaps to the majority of our 800 staffers any day. And the budget, I'm trying to remember the exact figures. We're part of the USAGM budget. There is a subset of numbers for the Voice of America. I think it's around $250 million or something like that. It's like the cost of two fighter jets.
$250 million. I was just looking up the most recent budget for the Department of Defense, I believe is $850 billion.
Yeah. Public diplomacy soft power is tiny, tiny compared to the money we spend for a hard power. Now, I'm not advocating that we significantly reduce the funds that we spend for hard power. Again, that's something that the White House and Congress are to work out every year. But, this is just a tiny, tiny fraction of the federal budget. I mean, we're almost a rounding error.
It's funny that you put it in terms of fighter jets. So you're saying that the entire VOA budget is the equivalent of the value of the two fighter jets, which over the past 10 days have slipped off aircraft carriers accidentally and fallen into the Red Sea.
What is the insurance company write off on those two fighter jets? I don't know, but
But yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just a sliver of the budget. And yeah, I suspect it makes a huge impact. And I'm sure that you have a firsthand sense of that in a way that Americans never will. And as you said, when the VOA went off the air, made assumptions about what had happened, you said, was people asked you if there was a coup.
Well, they didn't ask me. I know there were some in Africa that were trying to reach our reporters there.
Yeah.
And they heard the static or saw the video loop with music. And they knew that when that happens in their country, there's been a coup d'etat. So they wondered if there had been a coup in the United States because no explanation was given. And still, there's been no explanation.
Steve, what can folks do? What do you recommend folks to do in my shoes, U.S. citizens that, you know, want to support the VOA in addition to, you know, writing, calling, emailing our members of Congress? Is there other things that you'd recommend beneficial to see that the VOA is working?
You can exercise your First Amendment rights. And if you're on social media, we have a campaign. It's hashtag Save VOA. So if you search for those social media accounts, we were shut down on Twitter for a couple of days with no explanation. That account is back up on Twitter, but we're on Blue Sky, on Instagram, on Facebook. So you can read those postings, which are going out on a daily basis, and help amplify those postings. And as you said, obviously, to, you know, contact your members of Congress. I'm not sure how many newspapers still have an op-ed page anymore, letters to the editor, but there's the digital version. And we're seeing a lot of personal stories about the impact that the Voice of America has had in people's lives. Martina Navratilova wrote such a piece recently, expressing how valuable U.S. international broadcasting had been in her life. We just had REM, the band, reissue Radio Free Europe song. Proceeds so I'll be going to help support RFE, which was also 100% funded by the U.S. government. The distinction is VOA and Office of Cuba Broadcasting are 100% part of the federal government, where RFERL, RFA, and Middle East Broadcasting Networks in Arabic to the Middle East, obviously, are grantees. Congress approves those funds, and then USAGM doles them out, and USAGM has been strangling RFERL, MBN, and RFA by not doling out the monies. And there's also been legal battles to try to get those funds dispersed. So they've had to lay off a tremendous amount of people and are pretty close to being silenced, as has been the case with the Voice of America since mid-March.
So we're approaching nearly 2 months now where there's been no sound abroad from VOA. So do you have an idea of kind of what the next steps are, what the timeline potentially could be to reinstate VOA's voice?
No, you have to ask the U.S. Agency for Global Media. It's their call. There's been some developments in the past few days. We're not real happy with those developments because they, you know, are basically keeping most of the Voice of America dead, and then trying to implant as a news provider a domestic entity which is known for its strong bias and conspiracy theories. So these are not positive developments.
No, it'd be better to have no signal at all than to have the OAN content coming through the VOA, just absolutely destroying the channel. Oh my gosh. Yeah, well, good luck before the NBank DC circuit. I think there are some, you know, when you get a three-judge panel, it's a lottery. And I think that there are some cooler heads. So I hope you get a good decision there. But even if you do, it will certainly be appealed. And maybe this will be the one that that goes up to the Supreme Court and starts to set some of the boundaries of what the administration can
Yep. In the short term, we're in the hands of federal judges. In the long term, we're in the hands of Congress, because they are the ones who will approve a federal budget. And whether VOA ultimately lives or dies is going to be determined about whether we have any money allocated for the Voice of America.
Steve, thank you so much for joining. This has really been a fascinating conversation. It's a great excuse for me to meet you and talk to you about this, and for us to have this conversation. From a ham radio operator to ham radio operator, sorry, Rob, it's a club that you could join if you want. Mm-hmm. We'd be glad to bring you into the fold. I really appreciate your work and your advocacy on this really, really important issue. So.
Thank you for your attention to this issue, and good luck with your new media endeavor here. And as we say in ham radio, 73, which means best wishes.
73.
Steve. Take care.
Be Thanks. Well.
Signal strength.